Chapter 5, Bible Prophecy Says So. Once there was a really terrible flood. Everybody made it to safety except one guy. He climbs on top of his house and the water is lapping at his feet when a helicopter flies overhead and drops down a rope and the pilot says, "Climb up." But the man yells back to the pilot, "Hey, it's all right. The Lord is going to save me." And the helicopter flew away. But then the water began to rise higher and higher and then a boat came by and again the man said, "No, no, go away. The Lord will come and save me." So, the boat sped off. The water was getting seriously deep by now and fortunately another helicopter comes by and drops down the rope. Again, he says, "I don't need saving. My Lord will come and save me." Reluctantly the second helicopter flies off. The rain continues to pour down and the water continues to rise and unfortunately the man drowns. So, he's at the gate of heaven and he sees Saint Peter and the man is so confused. So, he asks Saint Peter, "What's up with this? What's going on? I've lived the life of a faithful born-again Christian. Why didn't you rescue me?" Saint Peter replied, "We sent you two helicopters and a boat." So, as you can see, obviously this man needed help. How many can say he learned the hard way? God will send you his provision for your needs, you just need to reach out and take it the first time. Believe it or not, it's not just this man being flooded on top of his house, but it is the same thing with the Bible. Everything we need is right in this book, the Bible. But unfortunately, all we need to do is just reach out and take it the first time. We get drowned, as Christians, by our circumstances. Therefore, there is one mistake that you and I as Christians should never make, concerning the Bible: never ever doubt that the Bible came from God. But this has been going on with Christians and non-Christians alike. It doesn't seem to matter today, due to an ongoing skepticism for more than a century and false criticism towards the Bible, people, even Christians, are starting to doubt that the Bible really came from God. In order to stave off this criticism and hypocrisy even in the church, unfortunately, we are going to continue with "Did the Bible really come from God?" So far, we have seen the seven lines of logical evidence which are: the Bible says so. Jesus says so. Apostles say so. History says so. Transmission standards say so. Manuscript says so. Archaeology says so. So not only do we have copies of the Bible within the actual year of its writing, unlike secular writings that nobody questions, like Plato and Aristotle, 1,200 and 1,400 years removed, but we have archaeology that proves it came from God, he is holy, and he cannot lie. They say it has historic inaccuracies, but that's not true. Archaeology proves that everything that God says is right on even historical accounts, even with the people of Israel going through the Red Sea. We saw the chariots that were destroyed, under the sea. The eighth line of logical evidence showing us that the Bible really did come from God is that Bible prophecy says so. If the book came from God, you would think that it would contain things that only God would know, which would be the future. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Isaiah 42:5-9. This is what God the Lord says, "He who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and all that comes out of it, who gives breath to its people, and life to those who walk on it. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness, I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you and will make you to be a covenant for the people and a light for the Gentiles, to open eyes that are blind, to free captives from prison and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord, that is my name. I will not give my glory to another or my praise to idols. See, the former things have taken place, and new things I declare, before they spring into being I announce them to you."
So how do we know that the Bible really did come from God? Well, apparently, the eighth line of evidence is that prophecy says so. What did we just read? God is not only the creator of all things, but he knows about all things before they ever even happen, right? And the way he demonstrates that is by recording for us these prophetic events, i.e. the future, before it even happens, right? Which, as we saw before, is radically different than the so-called psychics out there that have a horrible track record of getting 92% of things wrong. God, on the other hand, when he makes a prediction about the future, is not only 100% accurate, but 100% accurate all the time. And it deals with specific intimate details right down to the T. Not like the psychics that say, you're going to meet somebody new, and you live in downtown New York City, yeah. And, whether you realize it or not, this aspect of God prophesying future events 100% accurate before they ever even occur is yet another powerful way to demonstrate that the Bible really did come from God. Why? Because stop and think about it. If a book were to have really come from God, then one would expect that it would contain things that only God could know, right? And so, the question is, does the Bible contain things that only God would know? Absolutely. In fact, it doesn't contain just a few things but tons of things only God could know. Let me share just a few of them with you. The first thing that God accurately prophesies 100% of the time, showing us that the Bible really did come from Him, is the rise and fall of nations.
Daniel 2:36, verses 38, 39, 40 and 45. That was the dream, and now I'll tell you what it means: you are the head of gold. After you are gone, another kingdom will rule, but it won't be as strong. Then it will be followed by a kingdom of bronze that will rule the whole world. Next, a kingdom of iron will come to power, crushing and shattering everything. God has told you what is going to happen.
And boy, did God ever tell Nebuchadnezzar what was going to happen. What we see here is Daniel's amazing prophecy of the rise of four totally different nations existing hundreds of years apart from each other. The first kingdom was Nebuchadnezzar's or Babylon, the second was the Medo-Persian Empire, the third was the Grecian Empire with Alexander the Great, and the fourth was the Roman Empire, which will be revived in the last days. And you may not think this is a big deal, but the skeptics sure do. You see, even the skeptics readily admit that Daniel accurately predicted the rise of these four empires, right down to the T. In fact, so much so, that they try to deny its supernatural origin by claiming that the book of Daniel was written after the events took place. But of course, this doesn't hold up to the textual evidence, and it only reveals what the skeptics are really saying. Don't confuse me with the facts. That's not possible. Only God could do that. Aha. And He did. But that's not all. The Bible not only accurately predicted the rise of nations, but it also predicted their downfall. And by the way, many of them were destroyed because of their ill treatment of the Jewish people. I think there's a lesson there. For instance, the Bible specifically predicted in the book of Nahum that the nation of Nineveh would be permanently destroyed, be destroyed by fire, would easily be captured, their army officers would desert, and that they'd even be drunk in their final hours. And so, the question is, did God get it right? Of course God doesn't lie. He's 100% accurate all the time. Not only did Nineveh cease to exist shortly after this prophecy, but just like Nahum said, archaeologists have uncovered a layer of ash in its ruins showing it was destroyed by fire, and ancient Babylonian records reveal that Nineveh was easily overtaken and that their officers fled the scene, and a Greek historian even records for us that the king gave much wine to his soldiers that night, which caused them to be drunk. But Nineveh isn't the only nation the Bible predicted would fall. The book of Isaiah predicted that the nation of Babylon would specifically be overthrown and attacked by the Medes, their gates would open for a guy named Cyrus, and they would be reduced to swampland. And so again, the question is, did God get it right? Of course God doesn't lie. He's 100% accurate all the time. Today it's common knowledge that the Medes joined up with the Persians and conquered Babylon, and despite Babylon's incredible defenses, history records that a guy named Cyrus diverted the flow of the Euphrates River and marched into the city via the riverbed, and archaeological excavations reveal that parts of Babylon cannot be dug up because it's now under the water, making it swamp-like. In the books of Ezekiel and Amos predicted that the city of Tyre would specifically be attacked by many nations, its fortresses would fail, their stones, timber and soil would be thrown into the sea, and the remains of the city would be used to spread fishing nets. Now that's a lot of specifics. So, did God get it right? Of course He doesn't lie. Babylon was the first to overthrow the city of Tyre, but the people retreated to an island fortress away from the mainland and escaped total destruction. So, wait a second, did God get it wrong? No. He wasn't done yet. Almost 250 years later, Alexander the Great attacked the city of Tyre. And when he did, the people did the same thing. They ran out to their island fortress. But as history records, Alexander the Great took the rubble from Tyre's mainland ruins, the stones, timber and soil, and cast them into the sea to make a land bridge to the island and conquer the people. In fact, the city of Tyre was repeatedly destroyed by the Phoenicians, the Romans, the Crusaders, and even the Muslims. And today Tyre is nothing but a flat barren rock that people only use to spread their fishing nets. Now I'm not a rocket scientist, but I'd say there's no way somebody could know all that specific information about the rise and fall of all those nations in advance without some outside help. How about you? That can't happen by chance. In fact, the only way they could know is if somebody who was above and beyond time and knew the beginning from the end personally told them about it, right? I wonder who that might be? God, perhaps? And that's one of the reasons why we know the Bible came from Him. The second thing God prophesies 100% accurate all the time, showing us the Bible really did come from him, is the arrival of the Messiah.
Isaiah 7:13-14. Then Isaiah said, "Hear now, you house of David. Is it not enough to try the patience of men? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign: the virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel."
Now, we're all very familiar with Isaiah's prophecy that the Messiah would be born of a virgin. I mean, we hear about it almost every single Christmas. In fact, we hear about it so much that I think we have lost its significance. But here's the point. As amazing as the virgin birth is, that's only one of hundreds of prophecies that Jesus fulfilled, proving that he was indeed the Messiah. Let's take a look at just 30 of them.
1. Born of a virgin, Isaiah 7:14. 2. Born of the seed of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Genesis 12:17 and Numbers 24. 3. Descended from the tribe of Judah, Genesis 49. 4. Heir to the throne of David, Isaiah 9:7. 5. Born in Bethlehem, Micah 5:2. 6. Slaughter of the innocents, Jeremiah 31:15. 7. Flight to Egypt, Hosea 11:1. 8. Preceded by a forerunner, Isaiah 43:5 and Malachi 3:1. 9. Declared the Son of God, Psalm 2:7. 10. Galilean ministry, Isaiah 9:1-2. 11. Came to heal the brokenhearted, Isaiah 61:1-2. 12. Rejected by his own, Isaiah 53:3. 13. Triumphal entry, Zechariah 9:9. 14. Betrayed by a friend, Psalm 41:9. 15. Sold for 30 pieces of silver, Zechariah 11:12 13. 16. Accused by false witnesses, Psalm 35:11. 17. Silent to accusations, Isaiah 53:7. 18. Spat upon and smitten, Isaiah 56. 19. Hated without reason, Psalm 35:19. 20. Hands pierced, Psalm 22:16. 21. Crucified with transgressors, Isaiah 53:12. 22. Scorned and mocked, Psalm 22:7 8. 23. Given vinegar and gall, Psalm 69:21. 24. Prayer for his enemies, Psalm 109:4. 25. Soldiers gambled for his coat, Psalm 22:18. 26. No bones broken, Psalm 34:20. 27. Side pierced, Zechariah 12:10. 28. Buried with the rich, Isaiah 53:9. 29. Would rise from the dead, Psalm 16:10 and 49:15. 30. Would ascend to God's right hand, Psalm 68:18.
Now here's the point. For one person to specifically fulfill all those prophecies is not only amazing, that God is screaming out, "It really came from me." But I still don't think we catch just how amazing it is until we take a look at the odds of something like this taking place.
By using the modern science of probability, we find that the chance that any man might have lived down to the present time and fulfilled just 8 prophecies is 1 in 10 to the 17th power. In order to help us comprehend this staggering probability, it can be illustrated by taking silver dollars and laying them on the state of Texas, which would be enough to cover the state 2 feet deep. Now mark one of these silver dollars with a red X and stir the whole mass thoroughly, all over the state. Blindfold a man and tell him that he can travel as far as he wishes, but he must pick up one silver dollar and say that this is the right one. What chance would he have of getting the right one? Just the same chance that the prophets would have had of writing just 8 prophecies and having them all come true in any one man. Furthermore, the odds of just 48 prophecies being fulfilled in one man would be 1 in 10157. And to give you an idea of just how big of a number that is, the estimated number of electrons in the whole universe is around 1 in 1079.
Now I'm not a rocket scientist, but I'd say it's pretty obvious that there's no way that Jesus fulfilled 48 prophecies by accident. And by the way, he didn't fulfill just 48 but over 300. That can't happen by chance. In fact, the only way it could happen is if somebody was above and beyond time and knew the beginning from the end and orchestrated the whole thing. I wonder who that might be? God, perhaps? And that's why we know the Bible came from him. But that's still not all. The Bible also predicted in the book of Daniel centuries before it happened, the long-awaited arrival of the Messiah in Jerusalem. And not just a good guess either, but down to the exact day. Daniel predicted in Daniel 9 that 173,880 days from the decree to rebuild Jerusalem, that the Messiah would come to Jerusalem and be cut off from his people. Now that's pretty specific, don't you think? So, what happened 173,880 days after the decree to rebuild Jerusalem? Well, that puts us as March 30, AD 33. And can anyone guess what happened on that day? Hey, that's right. That's the exact day when Jesus made his triumphal entry into Jerusalem, and he was rejected, or cut off from his people. But that's still not all. The Bible also predicted many specific events that would occur just prior to the return of the Messiah, his second coming, and you tell me if we're not getting close to those. Let's take a look at just 30 of them.
1. Israel returned to the land again, Isaiah 43:5-6. 2. Israel become a nation again, Isaiah 11:11-12. 3. Israel become a nation again in one day, Isaiah 66:8. 4. Israel become a united nation, Ezekiel 37:21-22. 5. Israel have a powerful military, Zechariah 12:6. 6. Their currency would become the shekel, Ezekiel 45:12,13,16. 7. Israel blossom as a rose in the desert, Isaiah 35:1-2. 8. Israel become a source of world conflict, Zechariah 12:2-3. 9. Israel rebuild the temple, Revelation 11:2. 10. Increase of travel, Daniel 12:4. 11. Increase of knowledge, Daniel 12:4. 12. Increase of unrest, 2 Timothy 3:1,7. 13. Increase of earthquakes, Matthew 24:7. 14. Increase of famines, Matthew 24:7. 15. Increase of pestilence, Luke 21:11. 16. Increase of wars, Matthew 24:6 7. 17. Increase of strange events in the sky, Luke 21:10 11. 18. Increase of global catastrophes, Joel 2:30 31. 19. Increase of false Christs, Matthew 24:4 5. 20. Increase of false teachers, Matthew 24:11. 21. Increase of wickedness, 2 Timothy 3:1 5. 22. The church would go into apostasy, 1 Timothy 4:1 2. 23. The world would push for a one world religion, Revelation 13. 24. The people of God would be persecuted around the whole planet, Matthew 24:9. 25. There would be a rise of an antichrist and false prophet, Revelation 13. 26. There would be a push for a one world government, Revelation 13. 27. There's a rise of global Big Brother society, Revelation 13. 28. There would be a push for a one world economy, Revelation 13. 29. One man would control all the buying and selling on the planet, Revelation 13. 30. There would be a push for some sort of a mark of the beast to be put in people's right hand or forehead across the planet, Revelation 13.
I don't know about you, but it's a good thing we don't see any signs of those things taking place. Yeah, right. Every single one of them is happening right now, which means Jesus is about to come back. In fact, there's almost 2,000 prophecies mentioned in the Bible. One third of the Bible's content deals with predictive prophecy, all of which has already been fulfilled, as you just saw, or is on the verge of being so. Therefore, here's the point. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if all the 300 prophecies came to pass concerning Jesus' first coming, and he knocked them out of the park, then what do you think is going to happen to some 318 prophecies concerning his second coming? I think he's going to knock those out of the park too. And speaking of Jesus' second coming, as you clearly saw, The Bible predicted nearly 2,000 years ago that there would be some sort of mark of the beast or antichrist that would be implanted in people all across the planet, right? And this mark would allow them to buy or sell, right? Well, here's the point. I'm glad that's nowhere near on the horizon, or is it? You tell me if we're not getting close for the return of Jesus Christ, because the commercials for the mark of the beast type technology are already here. They're being aired on TV. Check it out for yourself.
To think something so small can connect you to everything that matters, when your life and all you love are on the line. HealthLink is always with you. When every second counts in the emergency room. Providing immediate access to your medical records. Because Bob has trouble remembering all his medications. Because I'm in love with my kids' kids. Because my car lost control while driving. Because now I'm looking out for both of us. Because I have diabetes, but it doesn't have me. Because I spend my life in the ER trying to save yours. HealthLink. Linking you and your health record.
Huh? If only you'd receive this implant, it'll save your life. Aren't you glad they're taking over the healthcare system? Notice where they're starting? But they'll never force us into taking that, will they? We'll get to that in a second, but here's my point. Looks to me like somebody's promoting some sort of a mark thingy to implant into our bodies, how about you? Right now, on TV. I mean, won't it be so wonderful, so safe, so convenient? And that's precisely the selling point. And by the way, this same technology has the ability to not only store your medical information, but any information, including your ID, as well as make financial transactions, you know, buy and sell stuff. But you might be thinking, hey man, there's no way in the world people are going to accept that thing into their bodies. I don't care what they do. I don't care how many commercials they run, nobody's going to fall for this. This is crazy. Really? Well, crazy or not, you tell me if people, for the first time on mankind's history, are ready to receive some sort of a mark into their bodies.
A procedure that only takes seconds to carry out.
And the chip is now extruded, and we're finished.
Has turned the Jacobs family into medical pioneers. They are the first people to get chipped. Implanted with a tiny device called a VeriChip that emits radio frequencies. It's a personal ID that also contains vital medical information.
It can save a lot of lives, including my dad's, because he has a lot of medical problems and I want him to be around for a while.
A handheld scanner reads the VeriChip. Theoretically, police, paramedics, and hospital workers would use the information during an emergency. Thousands of Americans are already lining up to get them, and Applied Digital Solutions, the company that developed the VeriChip, says this might only be the beginning. Company scientists are already working on a global positioning system similar to what you would use in your boat or your car, but to track people. And like the VeriChip, it would be small enough to implant in someone. Nathan Isaacson is in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease.
I couldn't find my way home, kinda embarrassing moment.
He already wears a beeper-like GPS gadget and was also injected with a VeriChip. Implanting both devices would give him and his family more peace of mind. Nate can't wait to be chipped.
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm looking for the peace of mind.
Peace of mind, if you'll just receive this implant. Wow. Looks to me like those commercials are working. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it would appear to me that for the first time in mankind's history, that people are not only ready to receive some sort of a mark into their bodies, but what? They're totally excited about it. Can you believe that? And you might be thinking, well, hey, that's for those crazy people out there. But not me, man. No way. There's no stinking way I'm ever going to go along with this. I'll never take that thing into my body. Really? Well, again, I'll say it again, aren't you glad they took over the healthcare system? And if you don't think that day will ever come, where our own government will force us into taking some sort of a mark into our bodies, you're wrong. Number one, they forced us into taking health care, right? Number two, you'd better listen to this from Congress, where Senator Joseph Biden, who's was vice president, was grilling then-candidate John Roberts for Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who is now the Chief Justice, and you tell me if there's not plans of being forced by our own government into receiving some sort of a mark and implant into our bodies. Check this out. John Roberts' confirmation. Joe Biden to then appointee John Roberts, and will be faced with equally consequential decisions in the 21st century. Can a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement? There's actual discussion about that. You will rule on that, mark my words, before your tenor is over. Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior? You will rule on that. Dr. Catherine Albrecht, I think the real concern that most people have is that at some point, the government would say, line up and get your chip. But hey, that'll never happen. You will rule on that, mark my words. I don't know about you, but if Congress is talking about implanting microscopic tags into people to track their every move, then my guess is they're probably going to implant microscopic tags into people to track their every move. How about you? And Biden was the vice president and Roberts has been the chief justice for a while now. I wonder when he's going to rule on it, just like he did with the healthcare. I don't know about you, but I'd say it's time we better wake up. Jesus Christ is coming back, and it might be a whole lot sooner than you think. You better make sure you're ready. But here's the point, predictive prophecy, as you can see, is a powerful way to show us that the Bible really came from God. He gets it right 100% of the time and it's happening before our very eyes. And that's why one researcher had this to say.
Unlike any other book, the Bible alone offers a multitude of specific predictions, some hundreds of years in advance that have been literally fulfilled. This shows us that the Bible alone contains things that only God can know and thus reveals its divine inspiration. Limited beings know the future only if it is told to them by an omniscient being. If an omniscient being is known to exist and highly improbable predictions are made in his name, which come to pass without fail, then it is reasonable to assume that they were divinely inspired. And if the Bible contains such predictions, then they are a sign of the Bible's divine origin.
In other words, you can't have it both ways. You can't agree with some of the Bible's teaching and then turn around and deny its authenticity. Why? Because Bible prophecy clearly presents the Bible as the genuine Word of God. And anything short of this is called hypocrisy. And so, it is with the skeptics of the Bible. They spout off bold claims that the Bible cannot be trusted, it's a book full of errors, it's whooped up by man, yet it is they who refuse to look at the evidence. But people, be encouraged today. You don't have to give in to the attacks of the skeptic. You don't have to give in to doubt. You don't have to give in to one iota of criticism. What we hold in our hands is the genuine Word of God. And that's why, more than ever, we've got to wake up and realize the golden opportunity that God is giving to us. Our world is in a frantic search for purpose and direction and meaning to life. They realize the world is messed up and it's getting worse. And so, they're full of questions like, why do I exist? Where did I come from? Where is all this evil coming from? Is there life after death? And is there any hope? And it's high time that we, the church, get busy not just saying the Bible came from God, but showing the world that it came from God by our diligence in studying it. Why? Because not only is the world going to be duped into receiving a mark of the beast into their bodies and sealing their own demise, but there's also going to be false prophets out there, that the Bible clearly warns about, but unless you get in there and read it for yourselves, you're going to fall for their lies as well, like these Christians did.
You know, the term cult really came to people's attention. For many people, the first time they ever heard the term was back in November of 1978. I'll never forget, I was leaving Manila that morning and I was flying to Singapore, and I got on the airplane and people were reading the newspaper and everybody was saying, I can't believe it, how could it happen? And I opened the newspaper and there on the Manila Times the headlines read 913 Americans from California commit mass suicide in Jonestown, Guyana. If you remember the cover of Times magazine that week, the cult of death, telling the story of Jim Jones and the People's Temple in San Francisco. Jim Jones had moved out to California, established what he called the People's Temple in the Bay Area, gathered a group of followers around him and began to teach that he was the voice of God, that he was the prophet of God on earth, and that he alone had the truth. And he so convinced over 1,000 people here in California that he was the voice of God, the prophet of God on earth, that when he told them to move down to British Guyana in South America and establish a commune called Jonestown. Over 1,000 people from the Bay Area moved to South America, and we hear on the last tapes where he's telling his followers that he is the Messiah, that he is Jesus Christ himself. And when he told them to drink poison, 913 people from California took Dixie cups and dipped it in that vat of grape Kool-Aid laced with cyanide poison, and they gave the poison to their babies and to their children and drank it themselves, and Newsweek had it on their cover, the picture of 900 Americans, as their bloated bodies lying in the hot tropical jungle having committed mass suicide following a man who they believed was the voice of God, the prophet of God on earth.
And people said, how could it happen? I mean, how can you have 1,000 intelligent Americans from California follow a man and be told to drink poison and they commit mass suicide? It is interesting to me that the commander of U.S. forces who is responsible for going down to Jonestown and cleaning the camp out and bring the bodies back for burial.
When he returned to Dover Air Force Base, he held a press conference. He was a Christian, and I'll never forget one of the things the commander stated. He said, you know the thing that interested us most about Jonestown, he said, when we cleaned the camp out, we did not find a single Bible in all of Jonestown. They all died, and they were all duped, and there were no Bibles in their camp.
If we don't want to be duped even today or led astray in the last days as Christians, then we better make sure we not only have Bibles in our camps, in our homes and in our churches, but we better get busy reading them.